One of the great privileges of being a pastor is caring for the church. And not only the church, which is the community, but the church. Literally the building that we're in. When I became a pastor at St. Ignatius Parish on the north side, Chicago and Rogers Park, I inherited a parish that had seen its heydays probably around the 40s and even in the 50s, in the 30s especially. Big, beautiful parish, just a gorgeous church with a baldacchino altar. And then off to the side of the baldacchino altar was a small little chapel that would hold about 100. The chapel itself was dedicated to Mary. And in the backdrop of the altar was a very famous copy of a mural whose depiction we all receive around Christmas time. And if I describe it to you, you'll know. It's Mary of the angels, and Mary is holding the child Jesus, and the angels are all encircling her. And that was the backdrop in this, what you would be able to see at one time was just this spectacular chapel. This has been a chapel that motivated a lot of activity in the parish. It had motivated food pantries and outreach, calling people to there. You could see it was the type of chapel that people would come in during the day, would kneel down and would pray, would offer God the sufferings, their joys, and see how God was just a part of their lives. And when I came in as the new pastor, I went into that chapel and I knelt down to pray, and I looked up, and I almost could hear Mother say, "Jerome, do something about my church, my chapel. Do something." And I looked around, and you could see that even during daily mass, that flakes would drop from the top of the ceiling. So I remember talking about that. The paint chips on the walls. There were murals on the top of the ceiling inside the chapel, but they were so darkened that you couldn't make out what they were. It was about 45 days after I was named as pastor. I was also named auxiliary bishop. And so people said to me, it came to me and said, "Listen, let's take this moment, let's do something. What do you want to do?" And I remembered kind of the words of Mother in the chapel. Let's do something about the chapel. Let's give it. Because that chapel will bring us not only together, but also kind of give us a focus of what we should do, what we are about, and help inspire it. You know, there are individuals who will kind of talk about, you know, you can hear, you know, "Oh, if you raise money, it should all go to the poor." And then all of a sudden you figure, "Oh, no, if you raise money, it should go to the future. Oh, no, if you raise money, it should..." You know, when the aspect of it, it's all together. It's all part of God's plan. Truth, beauty, and goodness. One does not deny the other. In fact, all of them together inspire all of us. And I could see from the vision in that chapel that it inspired a whole community to embrace literally everyone and to offer themselves to everyone. So I took that as a task. Well, what's one of the things immediately that you have to do? You have to find the right people to do the restoration. The right people. And so the first group that I called up came in. The first thing they did, they had the clipboard. They came right up to the wall. And they kind of looked and they took a little bit of the chip and they looked over and they start writing notes type of thing and shook their head, you know, and they walked out. Second group that came in, you know, immediately they said, "Listen, we can't do this and we can't do that. You know, this is going to cost too much money. This is beyond our ability. You know, we'll give you an estimate and we'll return." Third person who came in, and it was a reservation chapel, obviously. Third person who came in went up to the first pew, knelt down, crossed himself, prayed, came back, looked around, and said, "This is magnificent." Who do you think I wanted working on the restoration? Huh? Who do you think? You know, who do you think I wanted? The person whose vision already was to see the greatness that was embodied in this place. The person who knew the sacredness of this place. The person who knew the potential of what this place could offer. I say that because vision is so important. What is Jesus doing for all of us as Christians this morning? He's going up to the mountain. Who went up to the mountain? Moses. And what did Moses return with? He returned with the Ten Commandments of how you should order your life. Don't do this in order to be in a right relationship with God. But now Jesus' Son gives us the eight Beatitudes. This is how you should be. This is how you should live your life. This is the vision that should form you. This is the way you should see the truth enacted in every way and everything that we do. We are being given the vision of Christ's presence, our Christianity, in the eight Beatitudes. Now, you take a look at the eight Beatitudes, and every one of them is a sermon. So I won't be keeping you here till for a whole week, you know, trying to go through each one individually. Every one is a sermon in and of itself to open it up. But all of them are fashioned into a vision that's now being given to us by the Son of God in order for us to live. It's no longer the vision of the world that dominates us, although some of us are still caught by that, by the power, by the pleasure, by the possession. But now it's ultimately seeing the truth. And it's not that any of those are bad. It's the fact that individuals throw everything into that. They become the God. When there is but one God that we serve, and in our very being we're reflective of that God in this world. The vision. And when we have the vision, we have the sense of the truth that we're about. The Beatitudes do something else. There's a disposition that we develop. What is that disposition? Well, you take a look at the prophet Zephaniah, and you can see immediately prophet Zephaniah is talking about the remnant, the people who are still holding on to that relationship with God. And why are they holding on? There's a humility. They can't live without that God. That God means everything to them. Our God means everything to us. We can't live without that God. There's a humility. We are before God realizing that He is the one who gives meaning to our lives. Then the eight Beatitudes are literally Beatitudes. So besides humility, in terms of our disposition towards our God, humility, understanding it's God's way, not our way, that brings ultimate happiness. There's also docility. And what's docility? To be taught, to be able to be taught, to be a teachability. That's what docility is. And so here Jesus, as the teacher, literally he ascends the mount, so he has authority, is teaching us. This is the way you should be. This is how you should act. When the world drives you one way, understand it's not that way. It's always reflecting the truth of God's presence in our lives. So through this vision now, we dispose ourselves in humility and docility to allow God to use us as an instrument in this world and to reflect the truth. And I can tell you that truth has come to me in so many ways and from so many different individual sizes, shapes, genders, all throughout my entire life. If I'm listening to God, they're talking to me in the innocence of a child, in the wisdom of the aged, in the struggling of couples, in the pursuit of dreams. I'm listening to God calling out in the sufferings and the joys of this world, teaching me constantly, listening to the Beatitudes, celebrating that fact. When I was in India, I had the privilege, in one section in southern India, to go to an asylum for the deranged. And the asylum was being staffed by the sisters of Blessed Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa, and her sisters were there. And they took me on a tour inside of this asylum, and the asylum literally were housing, and I'm sorry to use this term, but the refuse of the society, people who could not be controlled in the society, people who were, when I say deranged, and the worst time for them was at night, and the men would go into one quarters and the women would go into the other. And literally at night, the night torments would come upon them. And what they would do is literally, and sorry to use this term, but literally the human excrement that would come about would be smeared on the walls and on each other. And these women would get up at 4:30 in the morning and pray, and right after prayer would go in to those areas and would clean those people up. They were treated with dignity. When I would talk to the sister, I was just simply amazed. How do you do it? How do you get up every day and go in and do the same thing day in and day out? Sister looked at me with amazement and said, "Bishop, it's for Christ. It's for Christ." Don't think that I wasn't taught at that moment that everything in terms of any struggle that we encounter, anything that happens to us, both as church, any suffering that we might endure, we don't understand all the time. It's for Christ. And even though it has to be day after day after day, it is for Christ day after day after day. And you know what? It's our joy. That's the contradiction. It's an awful task. This is terrible. It's our joy, because it's our love of Christ that is there with us. Humility, docility, which forms and fashions the vision that we know our relationship with the Lord. And lastly, there's our commitment. We may think we're not worthy. We may kind of think immediately, I don't have the task, I don't have the ability. You know what? You're right. You and I, we don't. God does. And it's allowing God to work through us. And that's why that St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians should give great solace to all of it. I know it does to me. I know it does to me. Rather, and I'm one of them, God chose the foolish of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly and the despised of the world, those who count for nothing, to reduce to nothing those who are something, so that no human being might boast before God. We don't. We boast of Him who works through us. And let me tell you, God has given us the sources of that strength. And what are the sources of that strength? His Word and the sacraments. That's why there's such a beauty in the church. It keeps us grounded. It gives us a sense of our responsibility. It calls us to reach out in His name and love one another, because it is He who we celebrate, and it's He who gives us joy. Today we're given the new vision in the 8 Beatitudes. We take that vision, we dispose ourselves to living it out, and we commit ourselves to that relationship. God's blessing on you all, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.